ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Here we are again, back in our Kartik breath, constitutional position, reading the Srimad Bhagavatam 5 hours a day. Every day, except for a couple of days, when we had half days.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, chapter 11. The Perfect Society, 4 Social Classes, beginning with text 6. Lord Narayana, along with his partial manifestation, Nara, appeared in this world through the daughter of Daksha Maharaj, known as Murti. He was begotten by Dharma Maharaj for the benefit of all living entities. Even now, he is still engaged in executing great austerities near the place known as Bhadrika Ashram. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles, and the memory of great authorities. O King Yudhishthira, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. Purport. As stated by Yamaraj, Dharmam Tusakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. Yamaraj, the representative of the Lord, who takes care of the living beings after their death, gives his verdict as to how and when the living being will change his body. He is the authority, and he says that the religious principles consist of the codes and laws given by God. No one can manufacture religion, and therefore manufactured religious systems are rejected by the followers of the Vedic principles. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15 it is said, Vedaischa sarvaraham eva vedya. Vedic knowledge means to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, whether one speaks of the Vedas, scriptures, religion, or the principles of everyone's occupational duty, all of them must aim at understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6 therefore concludes, Savai punsab bado dharmo yato bhaktir dharhuksaje ahai tuki apritiyata yayatma supersedati. In other words, religious principles aim at learning how to render transcendental loving service to the Lord. That service must be unmotivated and unchecked by material conditions, are considered to be all-pervading authorities. In Yajnavalkya Smriti, it is said, Shruti Smriti Sudachara Svasyaka Priyam Atmanaha Samyak Sankalga Kamo Dharma Mulam Idam Smritam. One should learn human behavior from Shruti, the Vedas, and from Smriti, the scriptures following the Vedic principles. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidimbina Aikanti Ki Harer Bhaktir Utpatayai Vakalpate. The purport is that to become a devotee, one must follow the principles laid down in Shruti and Smriti. One must follow the codes of the Puranas and the Panjaratriki Bidhi. One cannot be a devotee without following. One cannot be a pure devotee without following the Shruti and Smriti. And the Shruti and Smriti without devotional service cannot lead one to the perfection of life. Therefore, from all the evidence, the conclusion is that without bhakti, devotional service, there is no question of religious principles. God is the central figure in the performance of religious principles. Almost everything going on in this world as religion is devoid of any idea of devotional service and is therefore condemned by the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam. Without devotional service, so-called religious principles are only cheating. Texts 8 through 12. No daily double here. It's long, huh? There are general principles to be followed by all human beings. Truthfulness, mercy, austerity, observing fasts on certain days of the month, bathing twice a day, tolerance, discrimination between right and wrong, control of the mind, control of the senses, non-violence, celibacy, charity, reading of scripture, simplicity, satisfaction, rendering service to saintly persons, gradually taking leave of unnecessary engagements, observing the futility of the unnecessary activities of human society, remaining silent and grave, and avoiding unnecessary talk, considering whether one is the body or the soul, distributing food equally to all living entities, both men and animals, seeing every soul, especially in the human form, as a part of the Supreme Lord, hearing about the activities and instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of the saintly persons, chanting about these activities and instructions, always remembering these activities and instructions, trying to render service, performing worship, offering obeisances, becoming a servant, becoming a friend, and surrendering one's whole self. O King Yudhishthira, these 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. Simply by acquiring these qualifications, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In order that human beings be distinct from the animals, the great Saint Narada recommends that every human being be educated in terms of the above-mentioned 30 qualifications. Nowadays, there is propaganda everywhere, all over the world, for a secular state, a state interested only in mundane activities. But if the citizens of the state are not educated in the above-mentioned good qualities, how can there be happiness? For example, if the total populace is untruthful, how can the state be unhappy? Therefore, without consideration of one's belonging to a sectarian religion, whether Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, or any other sect, everyone should be taught to become truthful. Similarly, everyone should be taught to be merciful, and everyone should observe fasting on certain days of the month. Everyone should bathe twice a day, cleanse his teeth and body externally, and cleanse his mind internally by remembering the holy name of the Lord. The Lord is one, whether one is Hindu, Muslim, or Christian. Therefore, one should chant the holy name of the Lord regardless of differences in linguistic pronunciation. Also, everyone should be taught to be very careful not to discharge semen unnecessarily. This is very important for all human beings. If semen is not discharged unnecessarily, one becomes extremely strong in memory, determination, activity, and the vitality of one's bodily energy. Everyone should also be taught to be simple in thought and feeling and satisfied in body and mind. These are the general qualifications of a human being. Whoa. There is no question of a secular state or an ecclesiastical state. Unless one is educated in the above-mentioned 30 qualities, there cannot be any peace. Ultimately, it is recommended, Shavanam Kirtanam Chasya Smaranam Mahatam Gatehe Sevajya Vanitir Dasyam Sakyam Atma Samarpanam. Everyone should become a devotee of the Lord, because by becoming a devotee of the Lord, one automatically acquires the other qualities.
Yasyasti bhakti bhagavati kinchana sarvayako naistat samasate sudaha arawa bhaktasya kato mahadguna manoratina satidhavato bihi.
One who has unflinching devotional service to Krishna, all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods are consistently manifest. However, he who has no devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no good qualifications because he is engaged by mental concoction in material existence, which is the external feature of the Lord. Our Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, is all-embracing. Human civilization should take it very seriously and practice its principles for the peace of the world.
Those who have been reformed by the Gabhadana ceremony and other prescribed reformatory methods performed with Vedic mantras and without interruption, and who have been approved by Lord Brahma, are dvijas, or twice born. Such brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas, purified by their family traditions and by their behavior, should worship the Lord, study the Vedas, and give charity. In this system, they should follow the principles of the four ashramas, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Purport. After giving a general list of 30 qualifications for one's behavior, Narada Muni now describes the principles of the four varnas and four ashramas. A human being must be trained in the above-mentioned 30 qualities, otherwise he is not even a human being. Then, among such qualified persons, the vanashrama process should be introduced. In the vanashrama system, the first ceremony for purification is garbhadhana, which is performed with mantras at the time of sex for propagating a good child. When he uses sex life, not for sensual pleasures, but only to beget children, according to the reformatory method, is also accepted as a brahmachari. One should not waste semen on sensual pleasure, violating the principles of Vedic life. Restraint in sex is possible, however, only when the populace is trained in the above-mentioned 30 qualities. Otherwise, it is not possible. Even if one is born in a family of dvijas, were twice born, if they have not followed the reformatory process, he is called a dvijabandhu, not one of the twice born, but a friend of the twice born. The whole purpose of this system is to create good population. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, when women are polluted, the populace is Varnasankara, and when the Varnasankara population increases, the situation of the entire world becomes hellish. Therefore, all the Vedic literatures strongly warn against creating Varnasankara population. When there is Varnasankara population, the people cannot be properly controlled for peace and prosperity, regardless of great legislative assemblies, parliaments, and similar bodies. Text 14. For a brahmana, there are 6 occupational duties. A kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other 5 of these duties. A king, or kshatriya, is not allowed to levy taxes on brahmanas, but he may make his livelihood by levying minimal taxes, customs duties, and penalty fines upon his other subjects. Purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the position of brahmanas and kshatriyas as follows. Brahmanas have 6 occupational duties, of which 3 are compulsory, namely studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, and giving charity. By teaching, by inducing others to worship the deity, and by accepting gifts, the brahmanas receive the necessities of life. This is also confirmed in the Manu Sanyata. Sanang nukamanang masya trini karmani jibika yajana dhyapane chaiva vishudach chapitigraha. Of the six occupational duties of the brahmanas, three are compulsory, namely worship of the deity, study of the Vedas, and the giving of charity. In exchange, a brahmana should receive charity, and this should be his means of livelihood. A brahmana cannot take up any professional occupation duty. A brahmana cannot take up any professional occupational duty for his livelihood. The Shastras especially stress that if one claims to be a brahmana, he cannot engage in the service of anyone else. Otherwise, he at once falls from his position and becomes a Shudra. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami belong to a very respectable family. But because they engaged in the service of Nawab Hussein Shah, not even as ordinary clerks, but as ministers, they were ostracized from Brahminical society. Indeed, they became like Mohammedans and even changed their names. Unless a Brahmin is very pure, he cannot accept charity from others. Charity should be given to those who are pure. Even if one is born in a family of Brahmanas, if one acts as a Shudra, one cannot accept charity, for this is strictly prohibited. Although the Kshatriyas are almost as qualified as the Brahmanas, even they cannot accept charity. This is strictly prohibited in this verse by the word apatigraha. What to speak of the lower social orders, even the Kshatriyas must not accept charity. The king or government may levy taxes upon the citizens in various ways, by revenue duties, customs duties, realization of fines, and so on, provided the king is able to give full protection to his subjects to assure the security of their life and property. Unless he is able to give protection, he cannot levy taxes. However, a king must not levy any tax upon the brahmanas, and the Vaishnavas fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. Text 15. The mercantile community should always follow the directions of the brahmanas and engage in such occupational duties as agriculture, trade, and protection of cows. For the Shudras, the only duty is to accept the master from a higher social order and engage in his service. Text 16.
As an alternative, a brahmana may also take to the Vaishya's occupational duty of agricultural cow protection or trade. He may depend on that which he has received without begging. He may beg in the paddy field every day. He may collect paddy left in a field by its proprietor. Or he may collect food grains left here and there in the shops of grain dealers. These are the four means of livelihood that may also be adopted by brahmanas. Among these four, each of them in succession is better than the preceding one. Purport. A brahmana is sometimes offered land and cows in charity, and thus for his livelihood he may act in the same way as a Vaishya, by cultivating land, giving protection to cows, and trading off his surpluses. A better process, however, is to pick up grains from a field or from a dealer's shop without begging. 17. Except in a time of emergency, lower persons should not accept the occupational duties of those who are higher. When there is such an emergency, of course, everyone but the Kshatriya may accept the means of livelihood of others. Purport. The occupational duty of a brahmana should not be accepted by persons in lower social orders, especially Vaishyas and Shudras. For example, an occupational duty of the brahmana is to teach Vedic knowledge, but unless there is an emergency, This professional duty should not be accepted by the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras. Even a Kshatriya cannot accept the duties of a Brahmana unless there is an emergency. And then, even if he does so, he should not accept charity from anyone else. Sometimes Brahmanas protest against our Krishna consciousness movement for creating Brahmanas from Europeans, or in other words, from Lechas and Yavanas. This movement, however, is here supported in Srimad Bhagavatam. At the present moment, society is in a chaotic condition, and everyone has given up the cultivation of spiritual life, which is especially meant for the Brahmanas. But spiritual culture has been stopped all over the world. Because spiritual culture has been stopped all over the world, there is now an emergency, and therefore it is now time to train those who are considered lower and condemned, so that they may become Brahmanas and take up the work of spiritual progress. The spiritual progress of human society has been stopped, and this should be considered an emergency. Here is solid support from Narada Muni of the movement known as Krishna Consciousness. 18 through 20. In time of emergency, one may accept any of the various types of professions known as Ritta, Amrita, Mrita, Pramrita, and Satyanrita. But one should not at any time accept the profession of a dog. The profession of Unchashila, collecting grains from the field, is called Ritta. Collecting without begging is called Amrita. Begging grains is called Mrita. Tilling the ground is called Pramrita, and trade is called Satyanrita. Engaging in the service of low-grade persons, however, is called Shwavritti, the profession of the dogs. Specifically, Brahmins and Kshatriyas should not engage in the low and abominable service of Shudras. Brahmanas should be well acquainted with all Vedic knowledge, and Kshatriyas should be well acquainted with the worship of demigods. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chaturvanyam maya shushtam guna karma vibhagashaha. The four divisions of human society were created by the Supreme Lord according to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them. Formally, the principle of dividing human society into four sections, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, was strictly followed, but because of gradual neglect of the Varnashrama principles, Varnasankara population developed, and the entire institution has now been lost. In this age of Kali, practically everyone is a Shudra, Kalo Shudra Sambhava, and finding anyone who is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is very difficult. Although the Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, it is trying to reestablish the divine Varnashrama institution. For without this division of society, there cannot be peace and prosperity anywhere.
Shmo damas tapak shaucham santoshak chantar arjavam jnanam daya chitatmatmam satyam cha brahmalakshanam.
The symptoms of a Brahmana are control of the mind, control of the senses, austerity and penance, cleanliness, satisfaction, forgiveness, simplicity, knowledge, mercy, truthfulness, and complete surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In the institution of Varnashram Dharma, the symptoms of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasi are all described. The ultimate aim is a chutatmatvam, to think always of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna or Vishnu. To make advancement in Krishna consciousness, one has to become a Brahmana with the above-mentioned symptoms. 22. To be influential in battle, unconquerable, patient, challenging, and charitable, to control the bodily necessities, to be forgiving, to be attached to the brahminical nature, and to be always jolly and truthful. These are the symptoms of the Kshatriya.
text 23. Being always devoted to the demigods, the spiritual master and the supreme lord, Vishnu, endeavoring for advancement in religious principles, economic development and sense gratification, dharma, artha, and kama, believing in the words of the spiritual master and scripture, and always endeavoring with expertise in earning money. These are the symptoms of the Vaishya. That's very interesting. I didn't remember this verse. Can I say it again?
But then you have to tell us why you find it so interesting.
Would be so being always devoted to the demigods, the spiritual master and the supreme lord, Vishnu, endeavoring for advancement in religious principles, economic development and sense gratification, dharma, artha, and kama, believing in the words of the spiritual master and scripture, and always endeavoring with expertise in earning money, these are the symptoms of the Vaishya. So it struck me because it's such a contrast to what's going on today with people who make money. They make money at all costs. There's no question of, you know, being devoted to the demigods, to the spiritual master, supreme lord, believing in the words, spiritual master in scripture, you know? It's just stunning, the difference. Offering obeisances to the higher sections of society, the brahmanas, vaishyas, and brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas, being always very clean, being free from duplicity, serving one's master, performing sacrifices without uttering mantras, not stealing, always speaking the truth, and giving all protection to the cows and brahmanas. These are the symptoms of the Shudra. Everything's just the opposite now, isn't it? Those that do, they're just doing exactly the opposite. Purport. It is everyone's experience that workers or servants are generally accustomed to stealing. A first-class servant is one who does not steal. Here it is recommended that a first-class Shudra must remain very clean, must not steal or speak lies, and must always render service to his master. A Shudra may attend sacrifices and Vedic ritualistic ceremonies along with his master, but he should not utter the mantras, for these may be uttered only by the members of the higher sections of society. Unless one is completely pure and has been raised to the standard of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, in other words, unless one is Dvija, twice born, the chanting of mantras will not be fruitful. Text 25. To render service to the husband, to be always favorably disposed toward the husband, to be equally well disposed toward the husband's relatives and friends, and to follow the vows of the husband. These are the four principles to be followed by women described as chaste. Purport. It is very important for peaceful householder life that a woman follow the vow of her husband. Any disagreement with the husband's vow will disrupt family life. In this regard, Chanika Pandit gives a very valuable instruction. Dampatyo kalaho nasti tatra shri swayamagataha. When there are no fights between husband and wife, the goddess of fortune automatically comes to the home. Wow. A woman's education should be conducted along the lines indicated in this verse. The basic principle for a chaste woman is to be always favorably disposed toward her husband. In Bhagavad Gita it is said, Stri shu dushta suvarshnyaya jayate varnasankara. If the women are polluted, there will be varnasankara population. In modern time terms, the varnasankara are the hippies who do not follow any regulative injunctions. Another explanation is that when the population is varnasankara, no one can know who is on what platform. The varnashram system scientifically divides society into four varnas and four ashramas, but in varnasankara society, there are no such distinctions, and no one can know who is who.
In such a society, no one can distinguish between a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, and a Shudra. For peace and happiness in the material world, the Varnashrama institution must be introduced. The symptoms of one's activities must be defined, and one must be educated accordingly. Then spiritual advancement will automatically be possible.
Please reflect. Yes.
Just appreciating the point that Srila Prabhupada makes, that in a Varna Sankara society, one cannot make any distinctions. They cannot distinguish between the four different Varnas. And philosophically, we understand that everyone has their qualities because everybody is affected by the modes of nature, but then in a Varna Sankara society, everything is all mixed up. And I was just thinking about the application as a sadhaka, and also what I've seen in society is that after some time of chanting, practicing devotional service, one actually comes to realization of their own material qualities and how they're conditioned, and it becomes apparent to them how they should be engaging in the world. And it's such a practical thing because people don't even know that. They don't know what they should be doing and not doing. You know, like I had no idea that I should be dealing with knowledge and teaching until I started chanting Hare Krishna, and it became obvious to me and others that that's a tendency among other tendencies. And it's such a useful thing we have to offer the society, the world at large, is that, hey, you don't know what you want to do with yourself or what you're good at. Well, you can take to this process, and among everything else we're offering, we'll actually be revealed to you what your qualities are.
I was struck right from the beginning of this chapter with the 30 qualities that you must have to be a human being. Because, I was thinking, oh, this sounds like a pure devotee. But that was just a human
being.
Just a human being, you know. And then from that platform, then you can start to follow, spiritual, scriptural, religious principles. That it was stunning to me.
I just wanted to say I liked the verse about the Shudras, and it seemed like a good benchmark to look forward to. It's quite high, being free from duplicity, very clean, serving one's master, performing sacrifices without uttering mantras, not stealing, always speaking the truth, and giving all protection to the cows. That's, that's a pretty good standard. Something I can work on.
Yeah. Prabhu?
I was also appreciating that 30 qualities, because when I was doing yoga teacher training in L.A., telling people about, like, socha, masteya, not stealing, brahmacharya even, try to, it's very around the bush explaining people, like, what brahmacharya means, but I really appreciated how much more there is also, and how people can gradually come to know about this.
Mukharavin?
Amazed to see that for the brahmanas, the first the three necessary qualities is not just earning. The three qualities to give other people, and then the three qualities comes to earn for themselves. So it was just a mind and a little bit shift in the whole paradigm that we first always think about how can I myself be fit, but is the out of the six, three is the one to give others, and the remaining three is to take.
Yeah, I was interested in the ways that. In the gradations of the Brahmana, the topmost being the one that seemed to be the least dependent on others, and going to the shops and just picking up whatever was left over. Others that required human interaction, asking somebody for something, were good, but they were lower on the scale. It just reminded me of, I thought of you know, a lifestyle where you don't depend on anybody else at all for anything, as really the hallmark of the Brahminical mindset. You're completely independent in the sense that you're not owned by anybody else. Like, oh, he gave me grains yesterday, so that guy's like, I owe him something. But if you just picked it up on your own with nobody looking, there's nothing in your consciousness like, I owe this guy, or you're not bound to anybody. Lokapro?
I was just struck by how the whole chapter is centered on qualities of people and all different categories, and it's about character refinement and being a better and better person. And that provides motivation. Just by reading it, I feel motivated to develop some of these qualities. And it says that Varnashrama system is based on human beings who have these 30 qualities. So that's the foundation upon which the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra are based on. So they all have these qualities plus more. So that was very noteworthy for me.
Seems to be notable.
Yes, same thing. The qualities, it's very impressive that education means developing qualities, which is completely have nothing to do with the modern educational system where you pass tests, and if you master some information, you're considered educated, which is ridiculous according to this value system. So when this is totally, it's amazing to observe that it's missing. You can become Nobel Prize something, and then you can be totally according to this standard, you can be animal, and this is scary. And in our attempts to transform people and society, also this is like we should not. Sometimes we adopt a lot of elements from the Western educational system, which are useful, obviously, but we cannot neglect this part. We cannot address this and make sure that people who we try to train are actually developing qualities. That's why. Think of the Vedas is meant to develop a character, not to. So.
Yeah, I think I was going to say this just before you spoke also, that in our system of preparing persons for initiation and, you know, to enter the temple or to enter the society and to do things, if it's based just on a bunch of tick marks, you know, rather than the qualities that are being discussed here to be a human being, then what will happen? Our society will become too much like what we're trying to, reform.
I was just appreciating the fact that so many times when people hear about these kind of divisions, then they get so uncomfortable, like we're trying to create some kind of hierarchy. And here when Prabhupada's talking about how the reason why the lower, you know, people from the lower caste are not allowed to chant these mantras, it's not just random, but really because the mantras will not be fruitful because they have not been trained in higher qualities. And so right there, Prabhupada allows us to see that it is not just based on just random discrimination. There's a whole science behind it.
They can perform the ritual, but they just shouldn't say the mantras. Also, you know, this is also the standard when devotees first come to Krishna consciousness, even with the Pancharat system, that they may worship some deities, but they're not supposed to say the mantras until they're initiated. So they can just say, you know, please accept this offering or whatever, but they don't take the Pancharat mantras until they're bequeathed. Who else was there? Yes.
I also find it profound that usually when people think of a hierarchy system, they think of the top class being so powerful and extremely wealthy and like ruling over all the classes, like dominating them. But Brahminical culture is very peaceful and simple, and that's really amazing.
That's unfortunately what happens. That kings, although they're supposed to be kshatriyas and Rajarishis and so forth, have priests have become corrupt, Vaishyas have become corrupt, Shudras have become corrupt. So people became cynical. And really, arguably, for instance, the United States of America is a reaction to that. It's just break away from all this hierarchy, enough with the king stuff, king and queen, forget it. We'll decide amongst ourselves, and we'll have a society that everybody's equal. That's the idea with modern education. Educate everybody equally, everyone has an equal chance. Of course, it doesn't work out, but ultimately it all falls back into the fourth things, but people do become corrupted. You know, you get a little power, and the next thing, I think I was mentioning the other day, Michael's iron laws of oligarchy show that as soon as somebody gets a little power, they start investing more and more energy, and then all their energy into staying in power rather than doing their job properly from that point. Loki has a solution to this. I'm so glad to hear.
Now, just thinking about what you said, that the Kshatriyas, as we were reading, they were required to give charity, and I think that balanced out the power that anybody asked. They have to provide charity, or they have to give mandatory charity. And even the Brahmanas, so society where you can see where the Vaishyas and the other orders of the society, they can see Brahmanas and Brahmacharis dedicated to Absolute, then it inspires them to also follow.
With the permission of the chair, may I enter a shloka as evidence?
Granted.
Krishna speaks this verse in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Utsite yurime loka na karyam karma chedaham sankarasa sakarta syam upahanyami mapachaha. Krishna says, for if I didn't follow these principles, then I would be the cause of ruining the earth, causing varnasankara, and therefore ruining everything. So right from the top, this, sometimes I've heard people question, well, there's nothing about illicit sex in the Gita, no instruction about illicit sex, not having, but it's right there, varnasankara, upahanyam braj. Krishna himself saying, if I didn't follow these principles, I would be the cause of varnasankara, which means illicit sex. So he is the perfect example on all levels. Nami partha tikartavyam trishu lokshya kanchan nanavaptam abhaptyam vartha eva chikarmani. If I did not follow, I don't have anything to do. I don't have any duty, you know, to perform. I don't have any desire for fruits or whatever. But still I do my prescribed duty. And then...
Thank you. Continuing. 26, 27. A chaste woman must dress nicely and decorate herself with golden ornaments for the pleasure of her husband. Always wearing clean and attractive garments, she should sweep and clean the household with water and other liquids so that the entire house is always pure and clean. She should collect the household paraphernalia and keep the house always aromatic with incense and flowers, and must be ready to execute the desires of her husband. Being modest and truthful, controlling her senses, and speaking in sweet words, a chaste woman should engage in the service of her husband with love, according to time and circumstances. A chaste woman should not be greedy, but satisfied in all circumstances. She must be very expert in handling household affairs and should be fully conversant with religious principles. She should speak pleasingly and truthfully, and should be very careful and always clean and pure. Thus a chaste woman should engage with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. Purport. According to the injunction of Yajnavalkya, an authority on religious principles, Ashudhe Sampratikshyohi Mahapatakadushitaha, one is considered contaminated by the reactions of great sinful activities when one has not been purified according to the methods of Dashvita Sanskara. In Bhagavad Gita, however, the Lord says, Nam ham duskritinu mudha prapadyante naradama. Those miscreants who do not surrender unto me are the lowest of mankind. The word naradama means non-devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, Ye bhaje she bhado, a Prabhukta Hinacharu. Anyone who is a devotee is sinless. One who is not a devotee, however, is the most fallen and condemned. It is recommended, therefore, that a chaste wife not associate with a fallen husband. A fallen husband is one who is addicted to the four principles of sinful activity, namely illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication. Specifically, if one is not a soul surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Specifically, if one is not a soul surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is understood to be contaminated. Thus, a chaste woman is advised not to agree to serve such a husband. It is not that a chaste woman should be like a slave while her husband is Narottama, the lowest of men. Although the duties of a woman are different from those of a man, a chaste woman is not meant to serve a fallen husband. If her husband is fallen, it is recommended that she give up his association. Giving up the association of her husband does not mean, however, that a woman should marry again and thus indulge in prostitution. If a chaste woman unfortunately marries a husband who has fallen, she should live separately from him. Similarly, a husband can separate himself from a woman who is not chaste, according to the description of the Shastra. The conclusion that as a husband should be pure, a pure Vaishnava, and that a woman should be a chaste wife with all the symptoms described in this regard. Then both of them will be happy and make spiritual progress in Krishna consciousness. 29. The woman who engages in the service of her husband, following strictly in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune, surely returns home back to Godhead with her devotee husband and lives very happily in the Vaikuntha planets. Purport. The faithfulness of the goddess of fortune is the ideal for a chaste woman. The Brahma Sanghita 529 says, Lakshmi Sahasra Shatasam Brahma Sevyamanam. In the Vaikuntha planets, Lord Vishnu is worshipped by many, many thousands of goddesses of fortune, and in Goloka Vrindavan, Lord Krishna is worshipped by many thousands of gopis, all of whom are goddesses of fortune. A woman should serve her husband as faithfully as the goddess of fortune. A man should be an ideal servant of the Lord, and a woman should be an ideal wife like the goddess of fortune. Then both husband and wife will be so faithful and strong that by acting together they will return home back to Godhead without a doubt. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya gives this opinion. Harir asmin stita iti strinam bhartari bhavana shishyanam cha gurau nityam shudranam brahmano dishu brityanam saninitata hari bhava udharitaha. A woman should think of her husband as the Supreme Lord. Similarly, a disciple should think of the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A Shudra should think of a Brahmana as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a servant should think of his master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, all of them will automatically become devotees of the Lord. In other words, by thinking this way, all of them will become Krishna conscious. Can everyone please say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. 30. Among the mixed classes known as Sankara, those who are not thieves are known as Antivasisayi, or Chandalas, dog eaters. How pleasant. And they also have their hereditary customs. They're known among the mixed classes known as Sankara. Those who are not thieves are known as Antevasayi, or Chandalas, dog eaters, and they also have their hereditary customs. Purport. The four principal divisions of society, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, have been defined, and now there is a description of the Antyaja, the mixed classes. Among the mixed classes, there are two divisions, Pratiloma and Anulomaja. Pratilomaja. Anulomaja. If a woman of a higher caste marries a man of a lower caste, their union is called pratilo. If a woman of a low caste, however, marries a man of a high caste, their union is called anulo. The members of such dynasties have their traditional duties as barbers, washermen, and so on. Among the antyajas, those who are still somewhat pure in that they do not steal, are not addicted to meat-eating, drinking, illicit sex, and gambling, are called antivasayi. Among people of the lower classes, intermarriage and the drinking of wine are allowed, for these people do not recognize such conduct as sinful among themselves. And that brings us to the Gayatri break. We'll see you back here at 15 after. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol. Purport, in Bhagavad Gita 3:35 it is said, Shriyam Swadharmo Viganaha Paradhamma Swanushtita. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though they may be faulty, than another's duties. The Antyajas, the men of the lower classes, are accustomed to stealing, drinking, and illicit sex, but that is not considered sinful. For example, if a tiger kills a man, that is not sinful, but if a man kills another man, this is considered sinful, and the killer is hanged. What is a daily affair among the animals is a sinful act in human society. Thus, according to the symptoms of higher and lower sections of society, there are different varieties of occupational duties, according to the experts in Vedic knowledge. These duties are prescribed in terms of the age considered. 32. If one acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature and gradually gives up these activities, he attains the nishkama stage. Purport, if one gradually gives up his hereditary customs and duties and tries to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his natural position, he is gradually able to become free from these activities and he attains the stage of nishkama, freedom from material desires. Texts 33 and 34. My dear King, if an agricultural field is cultivated again and again, the power of its production decreases and whatever seeds are sown there are lost. Just as drops of ghee on a fire never extinguish the fire, but a flood of ghee will. Similarly, overindulgence in lusty desires mitigates such desires entirely. Purport, if one continuously sprinkles drops of ghee on a fire, the fire will not be extinguished, but if one suddenly puts a lump of ghee on a fire, the fire may possibly be extinguished entirely. Similarly, those who are too sinful and have thus been born in the lower classes are allowed to enjoy sinful activities fully, for thus there is a chance that these activities will become detestful to them, and they will get the opportunity to be purified. Yasya lakshanam proktam pumsam varnabhyabdham chakam yadanyatrapi dushyeta tatrinaiva vinirdishayat. If one shows the symptoms of being a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or shudra, as described above, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. Purport, herein it is clearly stated by Narada Muni that one should not be accepted as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or shudra according to birth, for although this is going on now, it is not accepted by the shastras. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4:13, chaturvanyam mayashrishtam guna karma vibhagashaha. Thus the four divisions of society, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, and shudra, are to be ascertained according to the qualities and activities. If one was born in a brahmana family and has acquired the brahmanical qualifications, he is to be accepted as a brahmana. Otherwise, he should be considered a brahma bandhu. Similarly, if a shudra acquires the qualities of a brahmana, although he was born in a shudra family, he is not a shudra because he has developed the qualities of a brahmana. He should be accepted as a brahmana. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant to develop these brahminical qualities. Regardless of the community in which one was born, if one develops the qualities of a brahmana, he should be accepted as a brahmana, and he then may be offered the order of sannyas. Unless one is qualified in terms of the brahminical symptoms, one cannot take sannyas. In designating a person a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, or shudra, birth is not the essential symptom. This understanding is very important. Here Narada Muni distinctly says that one may be accepted according to the caste of his birth if he has the corresponding qualifications, but otherwise he should not. One who has attained the qualifications of a brahmana, regardless of where he is born, where he was born, should be accepted as a brahmana. Similarly, if one has developed the qualities of a shudra or a chandala, regardless of where he was born, he should be accepted in terms of those symptoms. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Perfect Society, Four Social Classes.
Bravo. Bravissimo. Sadhu, sadhu.
It just reminded me of the ending of this chapter of the Veda Hari Bhakti Vilas gives the various times and places and circumstances under which a diksha should or should not take place. For instance, there are certain days that you shouldn't give diksha, certain places you shouldn't give diksha. But at the end of the whole thing, Sanatana Goswami says that actually whenever the guru decides is time for diksha, that's the best time. And similarly, there's a lot of considerations here about the various divisions. But at the very end, saved by the bell, there's this admonition that one must consider now what the quality of the person is and what they've developed, not how they've been born. It changes everything in the context of the way most people understand these parameters of Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and so forth. Yes, Prabhu? There is a mic, and we'd like to give it to you now.
I was just curious about this. It's very interesting that for certain members of society, there's actually an allocation for sinful activities, that they don't get the same sinful reactions that somebody in a higher class would, or any? I don't know if I understood that correctly. But what exactly is the qualifying division? It seems like it's also said, right, the one who's in knowledge, the reactions are stronger. Is that the kind of the barometer that however much knowledge you have, then therefore, or if you're just in complete ignorance, a shudra, you don't know anything, or no, shudras have to be good. But
yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, my godbrother and good friend, Paramahamsa, he took sannyas early on. He and Parvajakacharya in Vrindavan. And he told me, once he was talking to Prabhupada, Prabhupada's father used to give a hookah to sadhus who would come. He would invite every kind of sadhu to come to his house. As you probably noticed here in Vrindavan, a lot of the sadhus take in copious amounts of cannabis. They'll sit under the tree and just, you know, smoke all day long, some of them. And so, you know, when sadhus would come, he would give them, he kept some so that he could give them whatever they wanted when they'd come over. And so they were asking, Paramahamsa was asking Prabhupada about that. And he said, oh yeah, the Prabhupada said these sadhus, Paramahamsa, sometimes they'll take this. And then but then he looked at him, his name was Paramahamsa, but not this Paramahamsa. In other words, he could tell what he was thinking. Like, hey, this is for sadhus, right? It's easy to take advantage of these loopholes, is what Narada Muni was telling Vyasadeva in the 5th chapter of the 1st canto, that if you give any of these loopholes, then everyone will take advantage of them. Like the time that Prabhupada had a glass of 7-Up. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, there were 7-Up trucks pulling up to temples everywhere, unloading, you know, kegs of it. You were going to say?
Just riding on the coattails of that comment, I was reminded of... I was reminded of the fifth canto, where there's a particular punishment for those who choose to remain in Shudra life and don't try to elevate themselves.
Good.
Which helped me to understand that the whole point of the thing is to get elevated.
Yeah.
It's not to stay where you are.
It's similar to the seventh offense, the holy name. If you know what it is and you take advantage of it as a loophole, then you become more implicated. It's considered devious. There's not good faith. You're not doing it in good faith. If you're just ignorant and you can't get out of it, then there's some provision. It's so liberal. And then it goes to this extreme that goes, okay, you're totally addicted to this, so then maybe this could help you. Was there a couple more points, and we'll move on? 1, 2, 3.
I've thought of this before a lot, like especially in regards to like my family and like the activities they've done. Especially I think of like my grandma. She's like lived her whole life a certain way, and then like, you know, eating cows every day, and like, to what extent does she know how bad she's doing? And like, she seems like, I mean, she's just a gentle, nice person, somewhat pious, but there's just like this complete ignorance of the fact of what is sinful. So it seems like it wouldn't be fair to like have such extreme reactions to someone who just doesn't know.
That was mentioned in the fifth canto when we got into the hellish planets. There were some considerations of gradations of sinful activities, and according to that, there were various accommodations made for people in their reformation. The ultimate idea is that there's no inordinate punishment. It's all ultimately meant for a person's betterment and refinement. That's one thing. And the other is that it's perfectly administered. Because Yamaraj, as we heard, is tied into he's so empowered by Krishna that he knows the psychic movements of the living entities, almost like the super soul said. So he has a feeling for what people's mentalities are. And it's not just meant for automatic punishment, but it's meant really for sensitivity training so that they can better themselves ultimately. Last point? Yes, Prabhu.
It's a question. In terms of the Varnashrama being applied in our society, because often I hear that Prabhupada left half of the work, and that means implementing Varnashrama. Besides, you know, cultivating qualities as personal character development, all those connected with social system, like levying taxes by kshatriyas or brahmanas, living by collecting grains, how practical is and what does it mean in practice to implement it in
the
system?
First of all, where did you hear about the 50%?
I can't remember now, but I heard it many times, and I've never found a reference.
You have to verify such things for yourself.
Yeah, I've never found any reference.
Okay. Not only to verify the statement, but also the context, and make sure that it's applied with the amount of weight that it's supposed to be. I mean, a lot of times Prabhupada gives instructions because it's imperative that things get done, and then you also have to see in comparison with other instructions, you know, when it's supposed to be done at the cost of what are the things that's supposed to be done. That was only half of what you said, though, but I think I have a sneaking hunch that Keshav Bharti Maharaj wants to answer the second part.
I was going to say that...
Could we be collecting grains in the marketplace?
Well,
following up
what you just said, there's many places in which Srila Prabhupada said that it's not really possible to follow strictly according to the Vedic culture now in the present age. So if we think that we have to follow everything or else it's all or nothing, it's not like that. Prabhupada was very pragmatic, very practical, and he often said to us, we make the best use of a bad bargain kind of thing.
and he would adjust certain things. You know, he saw that the Western culture and how different it was, and he would adjust certain things. He would bend certain things, but he wouldn't break the basic core principles. But he would adjust certain things according to time and circumstance and the personality's ability to follow.
I just say also that if Prabhupada gave an instruction, then it's important for us to brainstorm and figure out how to apply it.
Yeah.
He might not have given a lot of details, because maybe he didn't have enough time, but if the instruction is there, then there's a way to implement it. And some of these are a little harder than others, but and especially given the time, place, and circumstance, we may not be able to do it right away, but if we don't discard it and say it's impossible, since he already said it, and we look into it as much as we can, and try to do to the degree that we can, then at some point we'll get the facility and the intelligence to do it. So I think it's
another point is the two discussions that I remember Prabhupada had where he directly addressed these kinds of questions with his senior people, you know, and it was, I think it was 1975 or 76 in Mayapur, and then Vrindavan morning walks, the famous Varnashram College discussions. And Prabhupada kept bringing it back to the fact that once a person becomes a Vaishnava, meaning initiated by a bona fide spiritual master and following the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, then that person is above the Varnas and Ashramas. But we may act according to our propensity in order to organize ourselves structurally in society, but we shouldn't see ourselves as being Shudras and Brahman, and that, you know, in those designations. A Vaishnava is actually above the modes of nature. Because that's what Shikapur was saying, that Prabhupada said things in such a way as to not allow our minds to go to extremes where we might start to categorize one another and see higher and lower and treat one another in that kind of discriminatory way that's actually going on in human society now, you know, on the plea of, you know, us following a structured system or a hierarchical system. Okay. Chapter 12, The Perfect Society, Four Spiritual Classes. Text 1. Radhamani said, a student should practice completely controlling his senses. He should be submissive and should have an attitude of firm friendship for the spiritual master. With a great vow, the brahmachari should live at the Gurukula only for the benefit of the guru. Text 2. At both junctions of day and night, namely in the early morning and the evening, he should be fully absorbed in thoughts of the spiritual master, fire, the sun god, and Lord Vishnu, and by chanting the Gayatri Mantra, he should worship them. 3. Being called by the spiritual master, the student should study the Vedic mantras regularly. Every day, before beginning his studies, or at the end of his studies, the disciple should Every day, before beginning his studies, and at the end of his studies, the disciple should respectfully offer obeisances unto the spiritual master. Text 4. Carrying pure kusha grass in his hand, the brahmachari should dress regularly with a belt of straw and with deerskin garments. He should wear matted hair, carry a rod and water pot, and be decorated with a sacred thread as recommended in the Shastras. So this is one example of something we might not want to apply rigidly in our brahmachari ashrams based on obvious principles. Deerskin. Text 5.
The brahmachari should go out morning and evening to collect alms, and he should offer all that he collects to the spiritual master. He should eat only if ordered to take food with the spiritual master. Otherwise, if the spiritual master does not give this order, he may sometimes have to fast. Today we have our bell. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Take six. A brahmachari should be quite well behaved and gentle and should not eat or collect more than necessary. He must always be active and expert, fully believing in the instructions of the spiritual master and the shastra. Fully controlling his senses, he should associate only as much as necessary with women or those controlled by women. Purport. A brahmachari should be very careful not to mix with women or with men addicted to women. Although when he goes out to beg alms, it is necessary to talk with women and with men very much attached to women. This association should be very short, and he should talk with them only about begging alms and not more. A brahmachari should be very careful in associating with men who are attached to women. Prabhupada used to say, it's more or less like pass the salt relationship. Text 7. Pass the salt. It's a social thing that everybody does with one another, but it doesn't go any further than passing the salt. Translation. Text 7. A brahmachari, or one who has not accepted the grihastha ashram, family life, must rigidly avoid talking with women or about women, for the senses are so powerful that they may agitate even the mind of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order of life. Purport. Brahmacharya essentially means the vow not to marry, but to observe strict celibacy, brihadrata. A brahmacharya or sannyasi should avoid talking with women or reading literature concerning talks between man and woman. The injunction restricting association with women is the basic principle of spiritual life. Associating or talking with women is never advised in any of the Vedic literatures. The entire Vedic system teaches one to avoid sex life so that one may gradually progress from brahmacharya to grihastha, from grihastha to vanaprastha, and from vanaprastha to sannyas, and then give up material enjoyment, which is the original cause of bondage to this material world. The word brihadrata refers to one who has decided not to marry, or in other words, not to indulge in sex life throughout his entire life. Text 8. If the wife of the spiritual master is young, a young brahmachari should not allow her to take care for his hair, to massage his body with oil, or bathe him with affection like a mother. Purport. The relationship between the student or disciple and the wife of the spiritual master or teacher is like that between son and mother. A mother sometimes cares for her son by combing his hair, massaging his body with oil, or bathing him. Similarly, the wife of a teacher is also a mother, guru patni, and therefore she may also care for the disciple in a motherly way. If the wife of the teacher is a young woman, however, a young brahmachari should not allow such a mother to touch him. This is strictly prohibited. There are seven kinds of mothers. Atmanatta guru patni brahmani rajapatnika dhenu datri tata pritli saptaita mataraksmitaha. These mothers are the original mother, the wife of the teacher or spiritual master, the wife of a brahmana, the king's wife, the cow, the nurse, and the earth. Unnecessary association with women, even with one's mother, sister, or daughter, is strictly prohibited. This is human civilization. A civilization that allows men to mix unrestrictedly with women is an animal civilization. In Kali Yuga, people are extremely liberal, but mixing with women and talking with them as equals actually constitutes an uncivilized way of life. Text 9. Woman is compared to fire, and man is compared to a butter pot. Therefore, therefore a man should avoid associating even with his own daughter in a secluded place. Similarly, he should also avoid association with other women. One should associate with women only for important business and not otherwise. Purport. If a butter pot and fire are kept together, the butter within the pot will certainly melt. Woman is compared to fire, and man is compared to a butter pot. However advanced one may be in restraining the senses, it is almost impossible for a man to keep himself controlled in the presence of a woman, even if she is his own daughter, mother, or sister. Indeed, his mind is agitated, even if one is in the renounced order of life. Therefore, Vedic civilization carefully restricts mingling between men and women. If one cannot understand the basic principle of restraining association between man and woman, he is to be considered an animal. That is the purport of this verse. Text 10. As long as a living entity is not completely self-realized, as long as he is not independent of the misconception of identifying with his body, which is nothing but a reflection of the original body and senses, he cannot be relieved of the conception of duality, which is epitomized by the duality between man and woman. Thus, there is every chance that he will fall down because his intelligence is bewildered. Purport. Here is another important warning that a man must save himself from attraction to woman. And thus one is self-realized, fully independent of the illusory conception of the material body. The duality of man and woman must undoubtedly continue. But when one is actually self-realized, this distinction ceases. Vidyabhinaya sampane bhavane gavihastane shuni chayavashapake cha panditat samadashinahu. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater outcast. On the spiritual platform, the learned person not only gives up the duality of man and woman, but also gives up the duality of man and animal. This is the test of self-realization. One must realize perfectly that the living being is spirit soul, but is tasting various types of material bodies. One may theoretically understand this, but when one has practical realization, then he actually becomes a pundit, one who knows. Until that time, the duality continues, and the conception of man and woman also continues. And in this stage, one should be extremely careful about mixing with women. No one should think himself perfect and forget the Shastric injunction that one should be very careful about associating even with his daughter, mother, or sister, not to speak of other women. Srila Madhvacharya cites the following shlokas in this regard. Unity and variety is real knowledge. And therefore, giving up variety artificially does not reflect perfect knowledge of monism. According to the Achintya Bhedabheda philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are varieties, but all of them constitute one unit. Such knowledge is knowledge of perfect oneness. I have an offering from Gopi Purana Lenapur in this regard. I heard him say one time about oneness and merging. He said, spiritual realization means to merge into the unity of spiritual variety. Merging into the oneness of spiritual variety.
Cool, cool. 11. All
the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. We really got an upgrade in the sound system, didn't we? Who would have thought it was all because it was in all the way in the back room this whole time? Now it's out here. We should put on the roof and let people in the neighborhood get a little taste. All the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. The grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation. Prabhupada, it is sometimes misunderstood that a grihastha, a householder, is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. This is a wrong conception of grihastha life. In spiritual life, whether one is a grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, or brahmachari, everyone is under the control of the spiritual master. The brahmacharis and sannyasis there are strong. For brahmacharis and sannyasis, there are strong restrictions on sexual indulgence. Similarly, there are strong restrictions for grihasthas. Grihasthas should indulge in sex only in accordance with the order of the guru. Therefore, it is mentioned here that one must follow the orders of the spiritual master. Guru Vrta Vikalpena. When the spiritual master orders, the grihastha may accept sex life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.11. Tama vido dhu bhuteshu kamusmi. Indulgence in sex life without disobedience to the religious rules and regulations constitutes a religious principle. The grihastha is allowed to indulge in sex life during the period favorable for procreation and in accordance with the spiritual master's order. If the spiritual master's orders allow a grihastha to engage in sex life at a particular time, then the grihastha may do so. Otherwise, if the spiritual master orders against it, the grihastha should abstain. The grihastha must obtain permission from the spiritual master to observe the ritualistic ceremony of Garbhadhana Samskara. Then he may approach his wife to beget children, otherwise not. A brahmana generally remains a brahmachari throughout his entire life, but although some brahmanas become grihasthas and indulge in sex life, they do so under the complete control of the spiritual master. The kshatriya is allowed to marry more than one wife, but this also must be in accordance with the instructions of a spiritual master. It is not that because one is a grihastha, he may marry as many times as he likes and indulge in sex life as he likes. This is not spiritual life. In spiritual life, one must conduct one's own life under the guidance of the guru. Only one who executes his spiritual life under the direction of the spiritual master can achieve the mercy of Krishna. Yasya prasada bhagava prasada. If one desires to advance in spiritual life, but he acts whimsically, not following the order of the spiritual master, he has no shelter. Yasya prasada nagati kutopi. Without the spiritual master's order, even the grihastha should not indulge in sex life. 12. Brahmacharis or grihasthas who have taken the vow of celibacy as described above should not indulge in the following: applying powder or ointment to the eyes, massaging the head with oil, massaging the body with the hands, seeing a woman or painting a woman's picture, eating meat, drinking wine, decorating the body with flower garlands, smearing scented ointment on the body, or decorating the body with ornaments. These should be given up. 14. According to the rules and regulations mentioned above, one who is twice born, namely a brahmana, kshatriya, or vaishya, should reside in the gurukula under the care of the spiritual master. There he should study and learn all the Vedic literatures along with their supplements and the Upanishads according to his ability and power to study. If possible, the student or disciple should reward the spiritual master with the remuneration the spiritual master requests. And then, following the master's order, the disciple should leave and accept one of the other ashramas, namely the grihastha ashrama, vanaprastha ashrama, or the sannyasa ashrama, as he desires. Purport. To study the Vedas and understand them, of course, requires some special intelligence. But the members of the three higher sections of society, namely the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, must learn the Vedic literatures according to their capability and power to understand. In other words, studying the Vedic literatures is compulsory for everyone but the Shudras and Antyajas. The Vedic literature gives the knowledge that can lead one to understand the Absolute Truth, Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Gurukula, or the Reformation Education or Institution, should be, what's that? Gurukula, or the Reformatory Educational Institution, should be used only to understand Vedic knowledge. At the present time, there are many educational institutions for training and technology, but such knowledge has nothing to do with understanding of the Absolute Truth. Technology, therefore, is meant for the Shudras, whereas the Vedas are meant for the Dvijas. Consequently, this verse states, Dvijo dvityava bhujya cha trayam sangopana panishadam. At the present time, in the age of Kali, practically everyone is a Shudra and no one is a Dvija. Therefore, the condition of society has very much deteriorated. Another point to be observed from this verse is that from the Brahmacharya Ashrama, one may accept the Sannyasa Ashrama, Vanaprastha Ashrama, or Grihastha Ashrama. It is not compulsory for a Brahmacharya to become a Grihastha. Because the ultimate aim is to understand the Absolute Truth, there is no necessity of going through all the different ashramas. Thus, one may proceed to the Sannyasa Ashrama directly from the Brahmacharya Ashrama. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur accepted the Sannyasa Ashrama directly from the Brahmacharya Ashrama. In other words, His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not think it compulsory to accept the Grihastha Ashrama or Vanaprastha Ashrama. 15. One should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has simultaneously entered and not entered. He is situated eternally and internally. He is situated externally and internally as the full controller of everything. The purport. Realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's omnipresence is the perfect realization of the Absolute Truth to be attained through the study of the Vedic literatures. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 535, the Lord is situated within the universe, within the heart of every living entity, and also within the atom. We should understand that whenever the Supreme Personality of God is present, He is present with all His paraphernalia, including His name, form, associates, and servants. The living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus one should understand that since the Supreme Lord has entered the atom, the living entities are also there. One must accept the inconceivable quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for no one can understand from the material point of view how the Lord is all-pervasive and yet situated in His own abode, Goloka Vrindavan. This realization is possible if one strictly follows the regulative principles of ashrama, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Srila Madhvacharya says in this regard, apravishta sarvagata pravishtas twan rupavan evam dvi rupa bhagavan hara eko janardana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in His original form has not entered everything, Pravishtaha, but in His impersonal form He has entered, Pravishtaha. Thus He has entered and not entered simultaneously. This is also explained in Bhagavad Gita 9.4, wherein the Lord says, Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachahante shavashtitaha. By me and my unmanifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The Lord can defy Himself. Thus, there is variety and unity. Ekatvam Bahutvam. Bahutvam.
It's interesting. There's a small change here. Here it says, the Lord is present everywhere, but still everything is not within Him. Thus, there is unity in variety, ekatvam, bahutvam. That's right. This is what happens after the verse. The Lord is present everywhere, but still everything is not within Him. Thus there is unity in variety. Ekatvam, bahutvam. Pretty clear, if you ask me. Of course you can't change anything, but...
Yeah. The Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions in purport that sarva-gata should not be taken, that the living entity is, each living entity is not all pervasive and everywhere. But in this purport, it's a little bit, he says this, once you understand that since the Supreme Lord has entered the atom, living entities are also there. So is the purport to that statement the same as what Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita about the living entities not being all pervasive or not being everywhere, like each individual living entity? Or is it saying that since the Lord is there, then the living entities are part of Him, so they're also there as part of His body or something like that? Or I'm probably reading too much into it.
Did you see that? Did you see what just happened? I was looking to him, and he was looking to me. It's like a hot potato. Now, I heard, that I just, by coincidence, or arrangement, I just listened to a morning walk in which Tamal Krishnamurti asked exactly the same question. Somebody asked him that question, and he couldn't answer it. And Prabhupada, his question was even deeper than your question. He was asking, well, if the soul is in the atom, then and the presence of the soul means consciousness, and when the body of that the soul's occupying breaks up, you know, so then he's saying, what happens if, does that mean that the atom breaks up and frees the soul? And then, and Prabhupada didn't answer it directly. You know, there's certain things that you actually can't know. It's not that we can know everything. And he didn't answer that directly, but what he did say was something to the effect that you said, that because Krishna is there, the soul is there. But he's not there in the same way as he is conscious in it, becoming the conscious living being within a body, because there's portals that allows the consciousness to come out. It doesn't mean that the soul doesn't have consciousness. But in contained within an atom, there's no event for the consciousness to come out. So therefore, it's different. It's not that the soul is an embodied soul in the atom exactly, because there's no senses, there's no avenue or way for the consciousness to come out. So in that sense, it would lend itself to your idea that the soul is there because Krishna is there. It's not that he's there in order to be, you know, living being of the body, of the atom. That's what I understood from that conversation.
Regarding the last verses about associating with women, I'm having trouble, I guess, digesting it. And also in regards to the statements about, like, the other aspects of Varnashram, like the brahmachari details, wearing all these things, wearing things that we don't wear. So I guess it's challenging to see what to accept and what not to accept. How do we know for sure in regards to this associating with women? A lot of, I've heard, in especially like the 70s and 80s, when there was a firm position of associating with women, that a lot of problems came, like sannyasis, like doing things to women were like not just like the like fall downs, but like I've heard stories of like just like being mean, basically being mean to the devotee women. So wondering how to digest that. In the application of these things.
There was a letter once that was written by Srila Prabhupada by a lady who brought up this point. And Prabhupada used the example that sometimes when a plant, a tree or a plant is very new, a sapling or a very new plant, then until the roots go into the ground, when it's planted, they have to put some kind of protective covering around it. So sometimes if a person is still agitated, but at the same time is trying to control the senses and is trying to be a brahmacharya sannyasi, then they may put up a protective shield by that kind of behavior, being too abrupt or, women spitting and things like that, being rough or rude. And it's not proper. Prabhupada said very clearly that it's not proper, but he said to the lady who wrote the letter, he said, you should have compassion on them. They're trying to do something that's extremely difficult. You know, when Ajamil fell down, he just happened to be walking through the forest on an order of his spiritual master and saw Shudrani embracing to have sex, and he couldn't get out of his mind. Then he ended up, doing all those things. And Prabhupada said, but in this age, all you have to do is walk out the door, and sometimes not even walking out the door, it's everywhere. And therefore, to restrain yourself under those conditions is extremely difficult. So Prabhupada would stress the importance of keeping oneself in the Lord of goodness and keeping oneself absorbed in hearing and chanting and, with a taste that will allow one to recognize when that, danger is there and to be able to not go there. And in terms of if sannyasis acted, improperly in the beginning, there was one point in 1976 where Prabhupada said, okay, enough sannyasis, because we could see that none of them are qualified. But at the same time, he gave those sannyasis because it was needed. It was needed for preaching and for pushing forward the movement. So these things can be adjusted, but they have to be adjusted with maturity and with spiritual knowledge, not just with knee-jerk kind of emotional reaction. With maturity, with time, it'll be easier to understand. And the other thing is, it's not if a person does something wrong, it's how they respond. If a person does something wrong and then responds properly, then he becomes reinstated easily, especially when it comes to sensual things. Prabhupada didn't take those things so seriously, but in our Western culture, we take that thing very seriously. So all these things have to be considered in a kind of holistic way, I guess you could say, so that we won't be disturbed by things that we see that aren't exactly according to what we read, etc., etc.
Notice that it's a general human tendency to get into a group, identify oneself with the group, and then exclude others. It happens in corporations too, because there's a lot of small companies within a big corporation, and it's actually a principle of management to make sure that those smaller units don't think they're the all in all, and then forget about the overall mission of the organization. And it's just, once we were playing a game at ISV as a break, we go for a picnic and then we divide it into groups because we were going to go look for stuff like a scavenger hunt or something. It's just emphasizing working together, teamwork. And I saw, and as soon as the devotees got divided into their groups, and immediately they started identifying with the group. I mean, it was half in joking, but it's half serious too. And also, there was a study done at Stanford University about prisons, and they hired some people for the, I mean, it was people volunteered, maybe they gave them a little something, they were studying prison life. And they appointed some people, just whoever they were, to be the prison guards and other people to be the prisoners. And after
half a week, or I forget the duration of time. They had to stop the 3 weeks. They had to stop the experiment because the prison guards, so-called prison guards, were just playing a role. They became so overbearing with the prisoners that they thought somebody might get killed. And so it's like a human tendency. And when we have these, we have this organization, and then you have these divisions within it. You know, this person's a this person's a that. You have to be really careful not to get what they call in corporations called bounded rationality. When the one little unit within the company starts thinking like we're better than everybody else, accounting department, without us, no one could live. So many of these problems happen because of the human tendency to just think that, whatever we're doing right now is the most important thing, whatever we are, our group, and things like that. And Prabhupada was constantly working to make sure that devotees didn't think like that. For instance, there was that one incident in Berkeley where the devotees, they wouldn't let women in the temple room to chant because they said, they're bothering. If the women are in the same temple room with us chanting at the same time.
I remember that. That was San Francisco.
Wasn't it? San Francisco.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sridhananda was there in the room and he was representing them to Prabhupada. We were in the room together and that happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, why don't you tell what happened?
Yeah, Prabhupada said, well, what we can do is we make it, a screen in the temple room, and then we could extend the screen to the doorway, and then we could extend the screen down the hallway, to the different ashrams, and that way you'd never have to look, at a woman. And then he looked at us and he said, "But what happens when you walk out the door?" And then he laughed.
When you walk out the door.
And then he just laughed. And he said, better you control your mind and senses. But I would like to say one thing about this. Go ahead.
Just that it's always a balance, as Maharaj was saying, but he always tried to emphasize how that, in an organization like ours, we have to, that's one of the main jobs that we have, is to maintain that balance so people don't get into the bounded rationality phase and start breaking off into sectarian groups. Groups have to be there in their natural, but if you make such strong distinctions between them and they can't interact properly, then you get an organization that gets stifled.
And we can't, if we forget that the various parts of the organization, or in this case, the parts of the social body, are meant to cooperate together to please Krishna. As soon as you take Krishna out of the center, and as soon as all the roles that we're playing, are not meant for pleasing Krishna, then those tendency for some group to come over the other group and exploit the other group for power or whatever the reason is. It's just another way of saying what you just said in any organization, but the social body is the same. The brahmacharis in the Vedic culture, they were trained right from the get-go, from 5 years old, to go to door to door and say to every woman that came to the door, "Dear Mother." And they just said it over and over again, the whole brahmachari life, "Dear Mother, Dear Mother, Dear Mother." And by the time that came time for them to, go out into the world or whatever, become married, they had a completely different consciousness than those of us, raised in this culture. So there are problems that come, that weren't there when the social structure was there from the beginning of our lives. And all these things have to be taken into consideration. Yeah. Let's hear it from the example.
You mentioned in the 70s and 80s, and in that time, most devotees were teenagers and in their 20s. There were a handful of devotees who were 30 or older. And as is sometimes the case, when you're a new devotee, you're fanatic. You're fanatic with your old friends, with your parents, with each other. And so we didn't have elders. Srila Prabhupada was our elder. And so now we have more of a society. We have more of a family atmosphere in some ways. And so while those things still can happen, they're less likely to happen because someone older and wiser is there to observe and can help to instruct. So I just wanted to.
When there are communities that are well adjusted, that is like, you know, I'm just taking off from what you're saying, and my observation is that, of course, you know, our overall society is a series of small communities, smallish, sometimes small, but sometimes large also. But when those communities are well adjusted, and there's a sense of the proper protocol and how everyone interacts with one another. And not only that, when there are relationships that people can depend on with elders, with younger devotees, and then there are good role models within that, then it tends to resist the tendency for people to become fanatical. And also it has to be engineered as well. I know I've heard things about Chaupati. I haven't lived there, but I do know that there's, because of Radhanath Maharaj's, when he took to management, he had already been through various experimental communities where people had done things that didn't work out so well, and I'm being very generous in saying that. And so, you know, his idea was like, I'll do the opposite when I get there. Some of the ideas, you know, that got inculcated into the community there was if brahmacharis criticize grihasthas, they have to leave the ashram. That was like a basic principle, because he saw that that happened before, and it's based on what I said, bounded rationality. Brahmacharis are the best. Everybody else is in maya. And if that kind of talk comes out, then it's like you're out. And when people understand in a community that that is the proper conduct, to appreciate the others, to serve the others, to see them as superior and so forth, just like in the corporations, they have to do that too, it's a similar thing, then if you emphasize that, and you have a community, then you find that it runs. And it takes work to not only engineer a community, but also to maintain it over a long period of time, to make sure that those things don't pop up. And they do. There's all kinds of people come into ISKCON from all kinds of backgrounds. Some of them are very conservative, some of them are more liberal. And living entities are living entities. Humans are humans. They do crazy stuff. You know, they do the wrong stuff most of the time. And so you have to make up for that by having a really strong support system. And as Nirakula was pointing out in the beginning, although we had a support system in one way, because Prabhupada was there, he was our nucleus, and we also had a lot of enthusiasm, there were a lot of the roles weren't there, and the checks and balances weren't completely ratified yet either. As devotees would just take one instruction over another and over-apply it, misapply it.
What to speak of the fact that in the beginning there weren't even books. There were no books. You know? And we were flying by the seat of our pants, more or less, until the books came out. I would like to offer, if I may, with the permission of the chair, of shloka.
Please.
Thank you.
Permission granted.
This is the shloka given by Krishna.
I cede the remainder of my time to the gentleman from Oroville, California.
I wonder if it still exists. It's right down the street from Paradise.
Oh, that's not good.
Not very good. Anyway, whether it does or doesn't, here we are. Yes, Krishna says, Tadvidi Panipatina, Pariprasnena Sevya, Upadekshantite Jnanam. This is, by the way, not the verse that I want to enter. No, this is not the verse. This is the introduction. This is the run-up to the verse. Yeah, run-up. Don't give it away. And in the end of that verse, it says, Tapadarshana, a person that's self-realized can give you knowledge. And then the next verse says what that knowledge is. And this is the gateway to solving all those problems. Yajgyatva napunar moham, evam yasasi pandava,
yena bhutanya sheshani drakshasyat manyatomayi. So when you've received that knowledge, Krishna says, then you won't fall down again. Because you will see that every living being is but a part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they're mine. So if you're coming to get love of God, and you're at least even aspiring, then if you begin to see through the vision that Krishna wants you to see, through that knowledge, then that will help a lot. When you see somebody that everything belongs to Krishna, and if you love Krishna, you attach to Krishna, you feel affection for Krishna, automatically that knowledge will temper those bad habits that we have from having been raised and developed so many bad habits.
One last point, and that is, Prabhupada lived in L.A. for some time, on and off. He would stay there to translate, and he had his servant make lunch for him every day. And in Los Angeles, there's a little closet in Prabhupada's room, and in it he had a hot plate, and the servant, the cook, would cook in there. And somebody asked why that was. Shruti Kirti Prabhu explained that Prabhupada would send his brahmachari servant down to cook in the kitchen. There'd be, brahmacharini in there, cutting vegetables or whatever, and then all of a sudden, blink, blink, and then, a couple days later, brahmachari was like, Prabhupada, I gotta go. You know, where are you going? I was like, you gotta get married. And, you know, it happened so many times that he moved his cooking operation up into his room so the service wasn't interrupted. And I'm just saying this as a practical matter in balancing the conversation, because on the other side, what the Srimad Bhagavatam is saying is absolutely true. And the forces of nature are inexorable, especially when it comes to men being attracted to women and vice versa. And so one has to be very careful, even as we administer ways in which the communities, everyone, we can all live together and serve together and everything like that. There has to be a pervading awareness of the fact that this kind of force applies to everybody, everywhere, at all times. This is what the Shastra, why the Shastra is saying it so emphatically, that, you know, nobody's exempted from this, not even Brahma, as we find out. So,
yes,
be careful. Thank you for joining us for the morning session. That brings our morning session to an end.
Wow.
We'll be joining back here again. Jai Gaura Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Jai Gaura Hari Bo. Nitai Gaura Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Nitai Gaura Hari Bo. Vanchakalpadurvishcha Kripasindabhevcha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namah. Natari Armarman, 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 Natari Armarman.